Here's a sicha that reminds us not to get too comfortable in the world as we know it. Our parasha tells us that Esav took his wives, his whole family, his assets, and off he went to live in a different land because of Yaakov, his brother. Why? What did Yaakov do to him? The next pasuk explains the reason. Because they had too many assets between them, and the land that they were in could simply not accommodate their flocks. Rashi comments on this, and we're going to have many questions on Rashi's commentary. It's the first thing. Pay attention to which words Rashi comments on. Rashi quotes the following words, that the land of their sojourn could not accommodate them. How could not accommodate them? And before she explains, laspik merely behemah shelohem, it did not provide enough pasture for their animals. Or medrash agada mipnei Yaakov achiv v'chule, and then there's a medrash that Rashi quotes, which we're not going to talk about now. We're going to talk about it a little bit later in the sicha. So hold that thought. We'll come back to it. First, let's talk about this concept that Rashi identifies that there wasn't enough pasture land for their animals. What's Rashi's intention here according to the commentaries on Rashi? Rashi seems to be bothered by the usage of words that the Torah says that the land could not carry them. Loseis, carry, it's a strange word. Obviously it doesn't mean that the land could not carry their weight, as if they were so heavy that they were going to fall through the land or something. So Rashi has to explain what does to carry them mean. So Rashi has to explain carry over here does not mean in the sense of carrying weight. It means to be able to carry what they needed. Couldn't provide enough resources for what they needed. And so therefore Esav had to move on. So that's what it would seem to be, right? Rashi has to tackle this concept of the carrying of Esav and Yaakov. So Esav leaves. Rashi says it's because there wasn't enough pasture for their animals. That's going to raise a series of questions for us. Number one, the Tzorch Lahav in Aleph. Im Kavanosach Rashi, the first Tevis, Laseisei Somi Pnei Mikneihem. According to the way Rashi explains it here, it sounds like Rashi is actually explaining the words, Laseisei Somi Pnei Mikneihem, that the land could not accommodate them because of their flocks. Laspik Mir Behemah Shalem, which he explains that there's not enough pasture land. Havadei Lahatik Tevis Eilimei Akosuv. Then Rashi should have just quoted those words. Right? Those are the words he should have quoted. Instead, which words does Rashi quote? That the land of their sojourn wasn't capable. But he doesn't say the words which seem to be key words. Question number two. Let's be honest. You need Rashi to tell you that the word laseis over here does not mean to physically carry. Obviously, the Torah was not telling us that they were too heavy for the land to carry. Obviously, it meant that the land could not accommodate them. What's Rashi telling us that we don't already know? Obefrat. Especially considering that back in Parshas Lech Lecha, where there was the conflict between Lot and his uncle Avraham about their flocks, there also the Torah said the land could not accommodate them. And Rashi already explained over there that it means that there wasn't enough pasture. So Mekan Choyzer Rashi Meforesh. Now Rashi has to explain it again. Usually Rashi does not repeat things that he's already explained previously. Question 3. Why does Rashi change? He's quoting a pasuk from the Torah. The Torah says that the land could not accommodate their flocks, which is quite specific. And Rashi instead says there wasn't enough room for their animals, which is a little bit more general. And really, please don't suggest that it's because Rashi has to explain the word miknehem that it means animals, as if we would think it means something else, because the word has appeared multiple times in the Torah already prior to this, and Rashi never needed to explain it before this. So why now would he have to explain miknehem means their animals? And not only that, viseira mizoi. V'parashas lecha nal koisef Rashi pivirusha laspik mir lim miknehem hanish zoy teva shepirusha pashut shari b'kasef sham lo nisker mikne. Go back to Parashas Lech Lecha, where Rashi spoke about the fact that the land could not accommodate both Avraham and Loit, and there he uses the word miknehem in his interpretation, obviously assuming you know what it means. It means flock. So then it's unthinkable that here he has to tell you, oh, do you know what miknehem means? You clearly do know what it means, because I've already used it before, quite comfortable in the belief that you know what it means. Question number 4. Now that Rashi gives the first explanation and tells us that what it actually means is that the land couldn't provide pasture for all of their flocks, that's a really good, simple, straightforward explanation. Why does Rashi then add an additional explanation? Especially if you consider that the second explanation Rashi quotes in his own words is not pshat, it's not the simple understanding of the pasuk, it's midrash, which is a whole different technique of learning. And yeserim mizoi bepirusha papashas lechanal mistapek rashi bapirush lo yisoy choy laspik mirli miknem veinamei bepirusha macherim. Back in Parashas Lech Lecha, where Rashi addressed a very similar topic about the land not being able to accommodate them, he doesn't resort to any additional explanations. He gives the pshat. There wasn't enough pasture land. End of story. So quite a lot about this Rashi does not appear to make sense to us. Why does Rashi quote different words to the ones he wants to explain? Why does he have to explain it at all? In the first place, surely it is self-evident. We wouldn't really have thought that the land couldn't accommodate their weight. Why does Rashi refer to behema when the Torah uses the word miknehem? And why does Rashi need two commentaries, especially considering that the second one is a medrash? Now, if you think we're done with the questions, we're not. Now we're going to take the second part of Rashi, and the Rebbe raises 6 questions on the Medrash that Rashi then continues with. Mamshich Rashi bepirushoi. So Rashi continues with his explanation. Medrash Hagod mipnei Yaakov Ochiv. What does it mean that he left because of Yaakov, his brother? Mipnei Shachoiv shel gzeiras ki ger yizar acho hamutal azara shel Yitzchak. What it means is that Esav ran away because he knew that there was this document, this IOU document that hung over the heads of all of the descendants of Avraham Avinu, that they were told by Hashem they would be strangers in a foreign land. Omar Eilech Limikan, Eini Cherik Loim Matona, Shenitna Loi Haaretz Azois, Veloi Pipiro En Ashtar. So Esav says, I don't need this. I don't need this land, and I don't need the issues that come with it. I don't need this specific place to live. I could live anywhere in the world. Living in this place means that one day my descendants are going to be strangers in a foreign land. I don't need that either. And then Rashi also continues, Abusha Shomochar Bechoyrosoi, plus Esav was also ashamed of the fact that he had sold his birthright to Yaakov. Begambo Zetzach Lahovin, here too, 6 questions that we need to understand. Aleph number 1. Yadua Kloloi Sharashi Bipirusha Allah Tayosha Hidua Hu Atsmoi Bipajas Bereshis. Firstly, we know that Rashi sets his own rules, clearly in his own words, of how his commentary is going to work. And what does he say? Multiple times, Vanile Bossi Ella Lipshutoi, I only come to teach things that relate to the Pshat, the simple understanding of the Pasuk. Ula Godam Yeshevas Divra Amrika Dovar Dovar Al Oifanov. And if I do quote a Midrash, it's to help to clarify the details of the exact wording of the Pshat, simple understanding of the Pasuk. Over Nido in Ze, Haripirish HaMidrash HaGoda Hu Heifech HaMafurish Bikra. Now what's Rashi doing here? First, he's bringing a Midrash. That's already unusual. And what kind of a Midrash? A Midrash that appears to go exactly contrary to what the Pasuk said. The pasuk said, why did Esav leave? Because practically he couldn't live in this place. There wasn't enough pasture for him and for Yaakov's flocks. Midrash says, why did he leave? He didn't want to have any of the tzoros of what's going to happen in the future if his descendants have to go into a foreign land. The Torah doesn't even allude to that. Why bring such a midrash? Question number 2. The Shoin Oishal Rashi Mipnei Abusha Chulei. Veloi Kosev Yashem Mechiyotzi B'Kedarka B'Chamon Kemish Mei B'Pirish Chadosh. It's interesting that Rashi gives a second explanation, but actually it looks like there are three explanations here. The first one, that there wasn't enough pasture land. The second, that he was worried about the concerns of being a foreigner. And the third, that he was embarrassed for having sold the birthright. But Rashi seems to make the last two as if they're a single explanation. He doesn't even use words like "and other people explain," etc. Which implies that the shame he felt over selling the birthright is an extension of the explanation that he was afraid of becoming a foreigner because of having this land. That's very strange. Go back to the original Midrash. It's very clear that these are two separate, independent explanations. One explanation is he was afraid of his children becoming foreigners in a strange land. And a different explanation is he felt ashamed for having sold the birthright. That's how it's stated in the Medrash. Rashi changes from his primary source and puts it as one single explanation, that is both concerned of the curse, so to speak, of having to be foreigners, and he's embarrassed of his birthright. Together, why does Rashi do that? Gimel, question 3. Considering that Rashi is not satisfied with a single reason for why Esav left, and he dafka brings another reason, that implies that neither reason alone was enough to convince Esav to leave. So just the factor of the pasture land would not have forced him to emigrate, and just the concern about his children becoming strangers in a foreign land would not have compelled him to leave either. And not the fact that he was embarrassed of the birthright. Now, in these two, the choice between leaving because of the concern of the decree of being in a foreign land, or because of the birthright, now, clearly, out of the two, Rashi puts the one about the birthright second. That tells you that the main reason in this explanation of the Medrash, the main reason for Esav to want to leave, is because he's worried about the decree against his children, and the issue of the birthright would appear to be a secondary issue. So we have to understand, why is that? So it doesn't seem to add up. Why is the main reason to leave, according to the Medrash, because of his fear of what might happen to his descendants? And then why bring the issue of the birthright at all, if that's such a compelling reason to leave? Why is it not good enough of a reason to leave that he needs the additional concern of being embarrassed? Ooh, I sold my birthright. How can I live in the place with Yaakov, who I sold it to? It's such a stain on my reputation. Question 4. Let's go down that particular path and say, let's say that the reason he's leaving is because there's this decree that his children are going to be foreigners in a strange land. So, hello, Esav. Why did it take you so long to realize? Esav, you've been living in this land. Your logic to leave is that if you live in this land, then you are subject to the decree of children having to be foreigners. Now, that decree has been in place since the birth of Yitzchak. It's been around for a while. Why do you wait for Yaakov to come back from Choron and then say, oops, I don't want to be in this land because it carries a decree? Why didn't you leave in the first place? Question number 5. Okay, it's a nuance, but it is interesting. Rashi usually comments only on the words that he's quoted in the headline. And here, when he talks about the Shtar Choiv, this so-called decree hanging over the descendants of whoever would live in the land, There Rashi references words in the pasuk that came earlier in the pasuk, right? Mipnei Yaakov, because of Yaakov Achiv. So why stick that in over here? You should have maybe discussed it at that point in the previous pasuk. And last question: Yisrael Mizoy Har Yisrael Lister Lepirush Rashi Sheinu Mipnei Shachiv Davram Ki Mipnei Yaakov. What's Rashi arguing here from the Medrash point of view? that Esau wants to leave because of something that was told to Avraham. Well, the pasuk doesn't say that. The pasuk says clearly he's leaving mipnei Yaakov ochiv, that Yaakov is the catalyst for his movement, not Avraham. So actually the pasuk would seem to undermine Rashi's argument that it's because of the decree that dates back two generations, and that's why Esav is leaving. So many questions on how Rashi has approached this particular pasuk. Questions on the first part of Rashi, questions on the second part of Rashi, questions on the structure of Rashi, questions on the logic of Esav. Quite a lot to unpack over here. And interestingly, sometimes when there are many questions, you can unpack them with one single shift. V'habir b'chol zeh. The whole explanation is this. B'pasuk shelifnei zeh ne'emar, in the preceding pasuk, which told us about Esav's move, as opposed to this pasuk, which tells us why he moved. So the pasuk that speaks about his move says this. Vayikach Esav goyim. It says Esav took. What did he take? Him a foreit. The pasuk details. Ves mikneu, ves kol behemtoi, ves kol kinyona, yasheroch ashberetz knan, vayelech el eretz. So it says he took his wife, he took his family, but then it goes into much more detail. His flocks, all of his animals, and all of his possessions that he had accumulated in the land of Canaan, and he went to a different land. And straight after that it says, Ki haya ruchusham stam rav mishevas yachdav. So what does the Torah then say? The Torah then says that their assets, so first it gives me a list of very detailed things, flocks, animals, possessions, and then it uses a generic term. It says, their assets were too many to accommodate in the same space. So now that you've used the word ruchusham, that links to the previous word rochash, everything that he had collected in the land of Canaan. So it sounds like what's it saying? That all of their assets were the issue. All of the things that they possessed, they simply couldn't live in the same environment because they both had too much general wealth. So if you follow that logic, that it says everything Esav had accumulated, Ruchusham, and Yaakov had accumulated, Asher Rochash, there, about Esav, what he had accumulated, so then logically, at the end when it says that the land could not accommodate Miknehem, which is obviously not a brand new concept, it's a continuation of the conversation. Miknehem is an extension of the ruchush, the possessions that they had which didn't allow them to live in the same space. Surely loy koy al tevas mikneu shabaposa kakoidem, or pirusha kebapashas lechlecho, la speak merely vehema shalahem, ki im pirusha im lusha miknas kesef kol ruchusham. Ah, this is where Rashi picks up on something and says, one second. You've now told me about all the ruchush, all of the accumulated wealth of Esav, which includes certain different categories, mikne, behema, general ruchush. And then you added the words asher rochash, everything that he accumulated. And then you say that the land could not accommodate them because of miknehem. Oh, well, in that case, I think maybe miknehem is a more generic term. Yes, I know in other places in the Torah previously, like in Parashas Lech Lecha, mikne specifically means flocks. But maybe over here it means mikne kinyonoi, which is a generic term of possessions. So maybe the Torah is telling us that because of their possessions, the land could not accommodate them. And then you'd have to explain like this. Now this would be an issue because this would seem to imply that physically there wasn't enough space in Canaan to house all of the collection of assets of both Yaakov and Esav. And that's odd because we were told that it's Eretz Rachvas Yodayim, that it's a broad and open land. So that's what catches Rashi's eye. Maybe the Torah is telling us a generic statement over here that even though they're living in this massive open space, they had so much stuff that they physically couldn't fit them together. And the word miknehem does not mean, like in every other place in Torah, just flock. It means their possessions. If we're going to go with that explanation, though, it raises a massive question. And it should appear Zeyesh Tamiya Gedoyla Beha Kosov. That explanation raises a massive question on the Pasuk. Why? Because Velo Yochlairitz Magraim Goimim Mavor Zeshi Yakovesim Enmichirim Laguri Yachad Beretz Knan. All the Pasuk explains, if it does mean that there's not enough space for the two of them in Canaan, that only explains why one of them has to go. But you know, it's a mega question over here. Why would Esav be the one to leave? And there are a whole lot of logical reasons why Esav Dafka should not be the one to leave. First of all, the most logical question is, Esav's been living in this place. Yaakov is the newcomer. It's illogical to say that Esav is now going to move out because the area is cluttered. The most logical thing for him to be would be to turn around to Yaakov and say, hello, I've been living here peacefully until you came along. You're the problem. Find somewhere else to live. And not only that, Yisera Mizai. Anybody who knows anything about Esav will know Esav's not a pushover. He's not a sweet guy. He doesn't just, oh, you know, I feel bad. You've had such a difficult life for the last 20 odd years. Why don't you come live here? I'll find somewhere else to live. That's not Esav. And we don't find anywhere that Yaakov cajoled him into going. The Torah makes it sound like, okay, it was an independent decision. Esav made the decision of his own, and that's why he's going. And this bothers Rashi tremendously. I could explain that the word miknehem means simply that there was so much stuff between the two of them that they couldn't live in the same place. That will not give me the slightest clue as to why Esav uncharacteristically packed up and went like a lemela. It's not his nature. That's what Rashi's got to address. Therefore, Rashi addresses that big question. How on earth did Esav suddenly, after all of these years, decide that he's moving? So to that, Rashi quotes the words, that the land they were living in could not accommodate them. And he explains, what does it mean couldn't accommodate them? It's specific. It's not that there's not enough space for them, but rather it's specific, lahaspik mir levehema shalahem, there was not enough pasture land for the two of them. In other words, Rashi is alerting us to the fact that you would have thought miknehem means all of their possessions, and that was the issue, that there simply wasn't enough room for them to both live in the same environment. Says Rashi, no, it's exactly like we saw in Parashas Lech Lecha. Just like in Lech Lecha, the land couldn't accommodate them because there was not enough pasture. Likewise, here the land could not accommodate them because there's not enough pasture. That's why Rashi does not use the same word as in the Pasuk Miknehem, because that's the word you might misunderstand. Because you might have thought Miknehem actually means their possessions, and he needs us to know that Miknehem means their animals. That's why he uses the word Livehemos to make it crystal clear that the issue at hand over here is there's a lack of pasture land. Because this is the first thing that helps us to appreciate why Yaakov has a better argument to remain in the land over Esav. Why? We already know from the previous parasha, Parashas Vayetze, that Yaakov's wealth was primarily his flocks. The pasuk says, "Vayifrei soish ma'oid," and he had tzoin rabois. Or kepirish Rashi, "Pores verabois yosim ishar tzoin." We know from Parashas Vayetze that Yaakov had an incredible amount of animals, to the extent that Rashi says it was an extraordinary amount of breeding that happened within his flocks. Mashenken Esav shenyana hayitzaidish sade kolin yonesad. V'lachin kashabo Yaakov le'eretz Kanaan hu hayo ha'ikim benegal emire ha'aretz. Esav, on the other hand, was not primarily a flock farmer, whether it was sheep or cattle or whatever. Esav is primarily a man of the field, whatever's going in the field, hunting, planting, agriculture, animals, whatever it is. He doesn't rely on his flock in order to maintain his wealth. So who really needs pasture land more? Yaakov. ולכן כשנסבר שלא יוכל לגרום להספיק מירי חולי, הרי בו זה היה ליעקב דימה בעדיפוס על איסו. So now when it emerges, as Rashi wants us to see, that the issue is not an issue of space to accommodate them, but it's specifically an issue of enough pasture land, live hemois, well, who should get precedence for pasture? Yaakov, because his whole livelihood depends on it. ולכן מדגיש רשי, דמה שלא יוכלו גוי מולהספיק מירש, על פי זה מוב, מה שהולך עשב מפני יעקב. That's why Rashi says, the issue at hand over here is pasture, which gives Yaakov a better argument why he should remain in the land, and why it is that Esav got up and left. Of course, because Esav's just going to get up and leave, because he's always going to do what is right. Amnon Muvan says the Rebbe exactly that point. Obviously, Rashi cannot be satisfied that that is the full motivation of what got Esav to move. Because it would be the greatest stretch of the imagination to argue that Esav leaves a place because he's decent. Because he believes in honesty and integrity. Especially considering that Yaakov came into his space. This is not the nature of Esav. So Rashi cannot leave the whole interpretation just to the fact that Esav felt bad for his little brother. And he said, you can have the pasture land which you so desperately need. That is so out of character to Esav that it's not pshat at all. Gam appears saying move and my commandment is achiva, but remember, yeah, there's been Yaakov. And plus, there's a technical detail. The Torah makes a big deal of emphasizing. Remember, every letter in the Torah is carefully chosen and perfect. And the Torah says he left Esav, left because of Yaakov, his brother. Why don't you just say he left because of Yaakov? We know who Yaakov is. We know the relationship. Why does he have to emphasize his brother? Lochem Moisif Rashi, to address that issue, Rashi has no option but to quote a medrash, which in his words, you only quote a medrash in order to settle the pshat, the simple understanding of the story. And here, the simple understanding is not settled. Because we have a burning question why Esav behaved decently. So we need a medrash for that. Says Rashi, medrash agodem, mipnei Yaakov Ochiv, mipnei Shtarchoiv, mipnei Abusha. That there were two other motivating factors going on in Esav's psyche that pushed him to leave. The Shtar Choyv, the decree that his descendants would have to be foreigners and slaves, and the shame that he carried over having sold the birthright. And they go together. It's those factors that help us to appreciate why Esav is the one who left in favor of Yaakov. Esav had other pre-existing reasons to leave this land, which he had procrastinated about, but they were there. So now when it hits a critical moment and someone's got to go, Esav's the one who chooses to go because he already had these niggling concerns that had been in his mind for a long time. Now we understand that the Medrash does not, as we originally thought, contradict the Pasuk. It endorses the Pasuk. The Pasuk says somebody had to go. The Medrash tells us who had to go. The Torah tells us the reasoning why somebody had to move out of the land because they both could not survive in the same space. The Medrash helps us to understand why Esav is the one who opted to leave. Was a moving to Yukosh Rashi, but Tokas Atevis, Medrash Agoda Mipnei Yaakov Ochiv Chule. Now we can address that question. We said, why is Rashi importing the previous pasuk into this interpretation? Why is he using the words that Esav left because of Yaakov, his brother? Well, because that's exactly the point of the second explanation, which consolidates for us our understanding of why Esav is the one who left. Why? That's what Rashi wants us to know. He wants us to know that this medrash is not yet to explain the entire pasuk, because the pasuk is self-understood. There was an issue of space. There was an issue of pasture. Somebody had to move. This medrash is only to explain the mipnei Yaakov Ochiv, why Esav is the one who chose to move. Rashi mata gam teva sochiv the Ramish. Al de pirzed yistar choivim gam kim shemuchr chakosav hadgish kanu achva. Ma'ashein kevel lo yochle eretz gomish tzorchis derach shak derach agav moisif achiv. And that's why Rashi specifies of Yamipnei Yaakov Achiv. Achiv, the brotherly connection between them, is extremely relevant to this part of the explanation. The first part of the Pasuk, when it tells us that they couldn't live in the same place because there wasn't enough pasture, it's not that important for us to know that Yaakov is Esav's brother. But when we get to the point that Esav has other considerations why to leave the land, and those considerations include what's going to happen to his descendants potentially, and the fact that he's ashamed for having sold the birthright, that links back to the fact that it's Yaakov, his brother. That relationship is now important. Now we can answer that original burning question. If Esav was so afraid of being in Israel and being in Canaan because of what it might have meant for his descendants, why did he wait for Yaakov to come back before making his decision? Now we get it. So the Torah tells us, Esav didn't have a compelling reason to move up until this point in time. He had a concern. He was worried about the document, but there was nothing forcing his hand. And as we often do with issues, we push them under the rug and we say, we'll deal with them at an appropriate time. Well, now things came to a head and there was no choice because somebody was going to be leaving Canaan. Now is the perfect time to address his other concerns. And not just that, not just because he was procrastinating. Something's going to happen now that shifts his thinking. Up until this point in time, the decree of somebody's descendants having to leave Canaan was just that kind of passed down sort of naturally from Abraham through the family. Something's going to change now. Somebody's going to make a conscious decision to be in this land. See the difference? If you're just in this land, because that's your default position, that's where you are. So you could say, I don't know, maybe my children will become the slaves. Maybe Yaakov's children will become the slaves when he moves, if he moves back or whatever. But now when I have to make a conscious decision, do I want to be in this land or not? Then it's a conscious accepting of the terms and conditions. When there's a choice now, somebody's got to go. And somebody has to choose to stay in this land. Whoever chooses to stay in this land is choosing to accept the decree of what will happen to their descendants. So that's what Rashi emphasizes for us. And he says over here, that's why it now comes to the moment where he has to make a decision, Esav. And he has to say, I don't want to be here. He has to say, I don't want to accept the contents of the decree against my descendants. So now it all comes together. Why does somebody have to go? Because there's not enough pasture land. Why does Esav choose to go? Because he had other considerations. Why are those considerations relevant now? Because if he would stay, he would be making a statement, I accept to suffer, or for my children to suffer, in accordance with the decree that was given to Avraham Avinu. Hello, Shatam Zeinu Maspika Dayin. However, that in itself is not a good enough reason for why Esav would have left. There's another whole psychology at play over here. If Esav leaves because Yaakov has come, even if Esav's motivation is because he doesn't want to be caught up in the shtar choiv, the decree of what will happen to his descendants, it's a pretty humiliating experience for Esav. This big, powerful, successful man who picks up and leaves with his tail between his legs because his brother Yaakov came. The Yaakov who he was always so vindictive against. Therefore, Rashi adds another angle to it. And the addition is not another explanation. It is an enhancement of this explanation. When the Medrash brings these two explanations, it brings them as different explanations because it's two different angles of how to explain the Pasuk. Because But Rashi's not using the Medrash over here to explain the wording of the Pasuk. He's using the Medrash to explain the psychology of Esav. And therefore he doesn't have to say there are two possible ways you fit this into the wording. It's one psychological process that Esav's going through, namely, in order for Rashi to explain the psychology of Esav, he needs a dual level of psychological process. Two reasons that worked in tandem to get Esav to leave. Reason one is, I don't want to have this story that my children will be exiled. Reason two, he's carrying this guilt and shame over having sold the birthright. What Rashi's telling us over here is that as long as Esav had lived in Canaan for all of these years, he always felt shame. Why did he feel shame? It's not my place. I sold my rights. Now Yaakov arrives, it accelerates his sense of shame. You know how embarrassing it is that now here is the candidate that I sold it to and we're going to live as neighbors? And he's going to be every single day, so to speak, in my face, consciously or not, making me think I'm really a stranger, I don't belong here. And now you can understand why Esav was willing to submit to Yaakov and even to carry that short-term shame of, wow, you moved because of your little brother who you were always so bravado against. Yeah, because the long-term embarrassment of living side by side with him, knowing that I'm actually the one who doesn't belong here, and he's the one who has now earned those rights, that is a deeply painful busha embarrassment every single day. Esav says, I don't want it. I'm out of here. Obviously, you understand that as embarrassing and shameful as that might have been, it's not enough of a compelling reason for him to uproot everything about his family, history, lineage, and move elsewhere. That's why Rashi can only bring this explanation as an add-on. The main reason to leave is so as not to expose his children to exile. Plus, what helps to seal the deal is the thought of living in shame every single day that Yaakov's on that land. But there's still one point that needs to be clarified. This is the part that the Rebbe is going to learn a lesson for us from. When Hashem decreed to Avraham Avinu that his children would be, his descendants would be strangers in a foreign land, nobody said it had to be Egypt. Rashi says it clearly. He did not say in Egypt, he said in a land that's not theirs, and that's why the clock began to tick already from the birth of Yitzchak, even though they only got to Egypt years and years later. So now the fact that Esav moves, because Yaakov's there, is that not already actually succumbing to the decree? Esav's great fear is he doesn't want to have children who are strangers in a foreign land. So what does he do? He goes to live in a foreign land. Is that not already the fulfillment of the decree? What's Esav avoiding? And here comes this beautiful insight. The emphasis of the decree was not the foreign land, but the ger yezar acha, the feeling of being a foreigner in that land, that you never settle, you never assimilate, you never become part of the milieu. And that's what Esav wanted. He's willing to move to another place, but when he moves to this new place, he will settle as a full citizen. He doesn't want to live as a ger. He doesn't want to be displaced and feel it. He wants to be displaced and settle. Take on a new identity, new citizenship, new culture if necessary. Assimilate as long as you feel solid. And that teaches us all a great lesson for ourselves living in Golus.
As
As long as we are in Golus and Mashiach is not here and hasn't vanquished our enemies and gathered the Jews and built the Beis HaMikdash, we dare not take an Esav attitude and say, well, it's okay, I'm at home in this place. It's not my home, but I'll be at home. We're not allowed to take that attitude. We have to remember, ger, we are strangers in that land. We should never become accustomed to the realities of Golus. Never accept the circumstances of Golus. Our goal and responsibility is to never feel at home in Golus, to never accept the attitudes of Golus, but to recognize that our purpose is Torah and mitzvahs, and our purpose is connection to Hashem, and our home will be when Mashiach comes, and we will never be satisfied, unlike Esav, who was happy to be satisfied in a foreign land. As long as it felt like home, a Jewish person is not going to accept a foreign environment until we are home with Mashiach immediately.